Hello, this is the second installment of Sanity Plea Radio. I'm William Klein.
Dan Petrosini.
To hear more episodes or to subscribe to future ones, visit us on the web at www.williamklein.org. In this broadcast for 18 October, we discuss the 1971 film THX-1138. It was the first feature-length film by George Lucas. We also discuss the closure of Land of Cran, a comic book and gaming shop in Canton, Ohio.
So it's my understanding that Will recently viewed a movie, one of George Lucas's lesser-known movies, THX-1138. It is also a science fiction movie. I haven't seen it myself, but I have a few questions that maybe, you know, it'll help you decide if you want to see THX-1138. So, Will, why don't you give us just a brief overview of the movie, first of all? I mean, all I really know is that it's sci-fi, it's in a future setting.
I'll just give you...
It's not in space.
It is not in space, and I'm going to try to do this without spoiling anything that isn't spoiled for you by the synopsis on the back of the DVD, or in my case, the Netflix envelope. It's set in this dystopian future. It's this totalitarian society where not only is everyone's behavior tightly controlled, but everyone is given these drugs, which they refer to as sedatives, that basically cause you to have not really no feelings, but no desires. You just go and do your job. The big thing is that sex is outlawed. Like, having a romantic partner is completely not okay. It's not clear why. That's just kind of part of the premise. And the story is that this man and this woman, who are just roommates in their assigned housing block, basically end up in a romantic relationship. The authorities find out, they're thrown in jail, and then the guy tries to get out and find her again.
I guess my first question is, how does it compare to the other George Lucas movies you've seen? Could you tell it was did it have the classic, like, wipes and pan, you know, the scene transitions and such?
No, and this is where I think I reveal that I do not have an academic background in film study.
Pop culture.
Or pop culture, period.
You're probably the least qualified person to be doing a movie review on this. Incredible.
Out of the two of us, yes, someone would have to be the least qualified and someone else the most qualified.
Thank you very much for that.
And in this case, I am the least. if I hadn't told me that it was a George Lucas film, I would not have said, oh, this is a George Lucas film. I mean, what was explained was he originally wrote this as a short film and then later, apparently with more money, redid it as a feature-length thing. I guess the only, without getting ahead of myself too much, I think the element that made it seem like a George Lucas film is that there were very impressive sets and very impressive costumes, and visually the whole film was very striking. You know, the future that was depicted was very stark. Everyone was mostly wearing just kind of these plain white suits. All of the places where they were in were these very stark, metallic or otherwise sort of futuristic corridors with very little adornment, and that was probably the most striking thing of the film, was the starkness of this.
Well, that's interesting to me, because that's more of a classic sci-fi depiction of the future compared to something like the Star Wars universe, which is very dirty and lived in, and, you know, the Mos Eisley, the Falcon is always seen as kind of beat up, and it's not the pristine, scrubbed-free future that you often see in sci-fi films.
Yeah, I mean, the cracks showed through in that you knew that all is not well in this future society. I mean, there are these recurring scenes of people in your residence, which, like the rest of the scenes, is a very stark. It's basically just a series of white, featureless rooms with maybe a couple chairs. But in every person's house, there's a medicine cabinet where, you know, you can get your daily dose of sedatives, but inside the medicine cabinet is a camera, and there are these repeated scenes where you see both a person in his or her residence and the people in the control room, and there's this repeated motif of you open the door and this electronic voice says, you know, what do you need or what's wrong, and the person says, I need a stronger dose, or this isn't working, or I don't feel well, and the thing responds, well, take three of such and so pill.
So in this movie, everyone is medicated, or everyone's using prescription drugs?
Apparently. You're never introduced to some kind of higher-up dictator who is, like, actually in control.
Do people go to work and have jobs?
They do. The only job, other than being in one of the control rooms doing surveillance or talking on headsets, because, of course, later the guy breaks out of jail, and so there's a long chase scene with the authorities, such as they are. The main character, whose name is THX1138, or rather, that's his serial number.
So in the future, in George Lucas's future, no one has names?
No one has names. In fact, the serial number that you're assigned isn't even yours. When you die, it gets reassigned to some newly born person. It's just kind of an identifier.
As if there were a finite number of numbers.
Which, I mean, you know, everyone only has three letters and four digits in the film, so... THX1138 has a job. He's apparently an android. It looks like he's an android assembly man. That's apparently his job.
What do you think this no sex in the future says about George Lucas and his own sex life? Or his sex life at the time.
I'm sure there's an excellent joke I could make, but I didn't really look at it that way. I think it was probably just emblematic of symbolic maybe of this tightly controlled medicated future, and it also provided an easy way for him and his roommate, who is, her name is LUH something or other, to easily break society's rules.
Mm. And how is the acting? I mean, I don't think there's any big name actors or actresses in this, correct?
The guy playing THX looked familiar, but I didn't really recognize his name. I mean, a lot of the film was their job to be stark and emotionless, so to the degree you think that's an easy job, maybe it wasn't that impressive, but they did a decent job, I thought.
Now, I mean, I guess I call Star Wars like a high action, high adventure. I mean, it's there's buckles being swashed, and and it's not... would you say this is more of like a filmmaker's film, like an arty film, compared to like the mass, you know, it's for mass consumption Star Wars?
It really is more what I would call an arty film. You watch it for the visuals and for the mood that it presents. You don't really watch it for the story, because the story is, you basically know the whole story when you read the synopsis on the envelope or on the case. Dystopian future, rebellion against, consequences ensue. There isn't really a climax of any kind, or if there was, I didn't detect it. It just kind of goes from, okay, you're in jail, and you manage to break out, and there are a series of scenes where he's trying to escape the authorities. But the film just kind of ends. It's not really, there's no real climax or resolution. It just kind of, the chase scene ends, and I won't say specifically how, but you really watch it for the mood and the sort of the visuals than for any kind of plot. So in that sense, it's very different from Star Wars. To finish a thought that I started earlier, if you really wanted to identify it as a George Lucas film, the uncharitable way to do so would be to say that it's heavy on sets and special effects and high budget, but very low on plot or acting.
Substance.
On substance. And that's a comparison I'm making, of course, to the
prequels.
So, yeah, the so-called prequels.
That leads me into my my next question, knowing now that we've established that you don't care for the prequels, which could be an entire podcast unto itself.
It could.
Which is so cliche for a nerd or geek culture.
Oh, yeah.
To do a prequel hate podcast. Anyway, now that he has announced that everything will be released in 3D, maybe it will be necessary.
Yeah.
There is a question here. Did watching this movie give you a new appreciation for Lucas's filmmaking?
Well, that's actually was a question I proposed that this film might answer before I watched it, which is to say, was Star Wars a complete fluke, or did he produce other good things? And this is something that
I think that the Penny Arcade, to quote Penny Arcade, my beloved accidental masterpiece, my once loved accidental masterpiece, or something like that.
Well, whether Star Wars was an accidental masterpiece, I leave aside. But I thought it was a good film. I mean, I enjoyed watching it. Like I say, it's just important to go in being ready to watch something that is very low on dialogue and story and action, and is really more about, let me sit here and appreciate this world that you've concocted for me to look at. I mean, most of the film is a series of scenes that aren't really directly related to the action. They're scenes of people going about their day in this future. They're security camera footage of people opening their medicine chests and complaining about how they need stronger sedatives or how they don't feel well. It's a series of all these people wearing white suits and with shaved heads speaking into microphones and looking blank. And occasionally seeing the cracks in the society when, you know, there's an accident at the android assembly plant and this giant explosion kills a bunch of people. And then the computer voice sort of announces it very calmly and praises the people working in the section where THX-1138 works for having only killed 190-some people in the past month through accidents, as opposed to the, you know, 200 or 300 in the warehouse next door. You know, that's where the sort of the cracks and the dystopian part figures in. And you watch it to see that scene and that story, or that depiction built, not for a, you know, even the quote so-called action sequences later, where THX is fleeing the authorities. It's not really an edge of your seat thing. It's really just another way to show you this world that he's created. I guess this may sound ignorant to some viewers, but you kind of watch it as a piece of art rather than as a piece of entertainment.
So what are your, I guess, just give a brief summation. What were your overall thoughts? How many classic Game Boys out of 10 would you give it?
Out of 10? Well, I mean, out of 5, I would give it a solid, like, 3.5, provided you go in ready.
So 10 is too big.
That's too. I'm not used to thinking in, like, I don't know how to decide between 6 and 7 on a scale of 10.
There's a big difference.
Well, okay, fine, but I reject your classification. If you're ready,
you gave it a 3.5 out of 5.
I give it a 3 or a 3.5 out of 5.
3.5 Game Boys out of 5.
Yeah, you go if you're ready to go in and sort of be ready for a low key sort of mood based. Art film, for some definition of that term. Don't go in expecting a swashbuckling sci-fi romp.
Buckles being swashed.
Yeah, there was. I mean, the scene, the sets, and the mood that it builds really are pretty cool. I mean, I liked the film. I enjoyed myself.
There you go, folks. If that's what you're looking for, THX-1138, George Lucas.
We have a bit of local news to report. A Canton area comic and gaming shop, Land of Crayon on Whipple Avenue, closed recently.
About a month ago now, I received word from a good friend of mine, Kevin Woodside, who also purchased his comics at Land of Crayon, that LOC was having a, I think it was Labor Day. Was Labor Day in September? Is that the one in September? Is that Labor?
That's embarrassing. We'll say in late September.
Yeah, it is. That's Labor Day.
All right.
It's Labor. I'm pretty sure it's Labor. Because Memorial Day is in the other thing.
Right.
Anyway.
I guess I'm less embarrassed about missing Labor Day than, like, Veterans Day.
November 11th.
If I missed Veterans Day, I would be a bad citizen. But I feel like Labor Day is okay to
Labor.
Screw up.
Anyway, there's a Labor Day sale, and basically, all their back issues were $1.
These are comics you're talking about.
Oh, yeah, comics, exactly. So I said, great, that's an awesome sale. I haven't bought any comics in a while. I'm going to go take advantage of this. Fables, which we talked about briefly on the last episode, I got a bunch of Fables issues, which was what prompted us to even discuss Fables in Sanity Plea Radio number 1.
He hadn't told you at this point that it was going
to No. I suspected. I asked him. I said, you know, are they doing bad? Because, you know, about a year ago, they moved locations into a smaller, same plaza, smaller store. And this was like the third or fourth time they've switched locations, always within the same plaza, but each time it's been a smaller store. So I said, you know, is he going to go out of business? Is he trying to, you know, get rid of a lot of his inventory? Then, you know, I think just a week later after the 2 weeks of sales, you know, it was announced through their Facebook page that they were shutting down and all of their inventory was being bought by another comics book store in town, which I haven't had a chance to visit yet.
Oh, I didn't know they were being bought up. Does that mean the store is going to be staying open?
The store, no. Land of Crayon is closed. Okay. But all of their comics, their unsold comics, all of their trades that were still there, all of their role-playing game books, all of their, they had a lot of board games even, Access and Allies, all being bought by one store.
So, okay, but the store's other locations, do you know the name of the other store?
It's like Bill's Comics. It's here in Canton.
Oh, so we still have a local...
yeah, there's a few shops, yeah. But I mean, they're just not as good.
I was about to ask, you know, what besides a comic shop, although I know probably a majority of his floor space was devoted to comics, but what else did he sell there? You mentioned board games and RPG books.
Well, I originally started going there was when I got into D&D and Star Wars CCG and Magic. Mm-hmm. You know, even back then, he would buy your, like, Star Wars rares and uncommons and give you store credit. So he sold, you know, basically what you'd find in any... you know, specialty gaming store. You had role playing games, some board games. Not a big supply.
I remember it was really most of the floor space was on comic books, and there were like two or three racks of T-shirts.
Yeah, there were some T-shirts. You could buy. There were some action figures, some like the more expensive model, like the statue models.
I do remember the tabletop games section being fairly small, except for there was a significant library of RPG books, but like the Axis and Allies and that kind of
thing. That was about it.
It was pretty small.
Yeah.
You wouldn't find Power Grid or...
It was mostly Ameritrash games, Avalon Hill classic titles, but no, you wouldn't find any of the Euro games there now.
Yeah. So you were starting to tell us what was your relationship with the store leading... Well, what was your relationship with the store throughout your lifetime?
I think I went in there about, I want to say, 1996 or 1997, which would have been early middle school, 7th grade. First time I went in was, I think, with Dave Murphy. We had just started playing Star Wars CCG, and we went there to buy some cards. When I started playing Magic, I distinctly remember being dropped off by my dad, who went across the street to Kinetics Sporting Goods with Paul. So Paul and I were there, and we had bought like some, I think it was Star Wars cards, pre-constructed decks. And I remember spending my last paycheck as a paperboy there on a D&D 2nd edition. I think you'll remember this, Will. It was the Combating Tactics Handbook.
Yes, I remember that.
It was a soft cover book with like a knight on the cover. Yeah. Remember this? Yeah. And I'll never forget this. On the drive home, my dad said, you know, you spent your last... You have no job. You spent all of your last paycheck on this book. And I said, yeah, my Amanda Cran. Thanks for bringing me.
Yeah. It wasn't until later that you really got into comic books, as I recall.
You enjoyed superheroes and that sort of thing. I just never read many comics. And, you know, he was a big comic collector. So as I started talking to him more and more... And I always knew the Land of Cran sold comics. It just became my, you know, of course, it was the natural place I'd buy my comics as well. So for a while there, I would be going, I went every week on comic book day and got the new releases. And as I went through college, I, you know, would stop in, you know, every few months and pick up new things that I was interested in. So
Before Kevin told you about the big Labor Day sale or sales, had it been a long time since you'd been in there?
Yeah, it had been. I hadn't bought any new comics for probably 6 months.
Okay, so it had been a hiatus.
It had been a hiatus. I mean, I'd still been reading, I'd been borrowing, but I hadn't purchased anything.
When you went back in, did it seem diminished? I mean, were there empty shelves all over the place? Did it look like a place that was going out of business?
No, absolutely not. For the sale, no. You know, and that's a lie. I hadn't been in there to buy comics, but once we started playing D&D again this summer, I had gone in there to buy some new dice. So when I went in there to get the new dice sets, when I went in for the sales, no, it was completely reasonable to believe that they were just having a sale. They had just recently opened up the Facebook's page that they announced the closure on a few months before. So I was... You know, I asked Kevin, but it was a surprise,
You talked about that being your source for comics. Why was it nice, or why would you buy the comics in a local shop as opposed to, say, through Amazon or some other online...
Your friendly local gaming store, you mean? Or your friendly local comic book shop? I mean, it's good to just... well, first of all, it serves as a place where you're going to see other... people that like the same things that you do. It's kind of like going to, you know, like a mini convention. You're going to see the guys rooting through the long boxes of back issues. Mm-hmm. You're going to converse with the clerk. You know, you can ask them for, you know, an opinion, like, what do you think of this book? And I'm sure I can read all the reviews online, you know, thousands of reviews. But, you know, you have a rapport with these people, especially the employees there. And you know what their tastes are, so you can really trust them when they recommend something to you. You lose all of that when you choose to go online, and especially with something like comic books, where they're coming out weekly. It's very difficult to buy online with any regularity.
Yeah, I note though, if I'm not mistaken, because Land of Kryn really only stocked, as you call it, Ameritrash games. Your more recent interest in board games and so-called indie tabletop games wasn't fed by Land of Kryn.
I mean,
you talk repeatedly about BoardGameGeek.com as being right. Sort of the big community there.
Yeah.
Is there no potential for such a community to crop up and serve that function for comics?
Like a major web community?
Yeah, you know, if there were a ComicsGeek.com, how would using that be different from walking into Land of Kryn and talking with the guy behind the counter?
Aside from the fact that you're not actually physically present with another person having a dialogue, you know, it might eventually. I'm sure that people do get 100% of their comic information from people, their online friends. But for me, I like going in the store. I like smelling the smell of the store, the new comics. Kryn always had a very interesting way of putting out the new comics. He had like a bunch of, you know, they were cubbies, I would guess you'd call them, and they'd, you know, you'd have a flap and you'd lift the flap and get your book, and I think that there's something to be said for that it's a local community. These people, you know, it's not only comics you could talk about too. You know, I could talk about high school football or any of the other things that are going on locally in your community.
So to the extent that you are reading comics now, and I know you were talking about revisiting the Fable series recently,
right. Mm-hmm.
Your life is poorer for Land of Kryn's closure.
Absolutely. I always knew that if I needed, you know, like when I needed my dice for D&D, I knew that it was there. I knew I could go in, and I knew that they'd have it. I'm going to check out the store that bought Kryn's inventory, but...
what are they called again?
I think it's just like Bills.
Do you know where is it?
It's in Canton, downtown.
Okay, somewhere downtown Canton.
Having been going there for 15 years, you know, it was a part of my life that I am poor for it. I will miss having that Land of Kryn around.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing your thoughts and feelings on the topic with us.
Thank you. All right. Oh, shout out to Dave Murphy. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate that. Everyone else who's downloaded it, I don't know your name, nor have you given me feedback. So maybe if you tell me that you enjoyed it, I'll talk about you as well.
Yes, we very much like to hear from you. So please contact us through our website. You can also download more episodes and subscribe to get future ones. It's williamcline.org. That's www.williamcline.org/projects/SPradio/. Thanks for listening.